The Reverend Gordon Merriweather is serving as pastor of the Green Charge of the United Methodist Church in Greene County, Virginia, just over the mountain. Prior to his appointment in the ministry, Gordon had a varied career in the U.S. Navy, business, academia, and politics. He is a 1970 graduate of the University of Alabama. Roll Tide. And was awarded his master's in business administration from George Washington University in 1988. Does George Washington have any kind of mantra?
Pay me, okay.
He is also a fellow at the Sorenson Institute of Political Leadership at the University of Virginia. In addition to earning his Master of Arts in Conflict Transformation, he will complete the requirements for a Master of Divinity here at Eastern Mennonite Seminary this spring. He is married with two grandchildren. Following his graduation with a dual degree, Reverend Merriweather plans to work with troubled congregations and ministries to support their renewal in the ministry and the faith. Gordon, come and present to us on the topic, The Spirit Untold, Touching the Face of God.
Well, thank you. I know some of you were here yesterday, so I will try not to repeat the same things. My wife is with me, and I want to... That's Dana. I'll get emotional because she's been with me, these 6 years it's taken when I started seminary and to now. I started with Dave Brubaker and Mary's course. I think that was congregational conflict or something like that. And that was meeting on a Wednesday, Friday and a Saturday, and Roger Foster was sitting next to me, and that's how about far back Roger and I go. And so I have a lot of friends in the audience, and I see you. I'm smiling ear to ear just to see you here. Thank you for being here. With that said, I'm going off the reservation. This is the topic that I'm writing my capstone on, and I'm going to touch on it briefly, but it's very important for me today since Bob May set me up. Thank you, Bob. Bob is number six to do the dual degree, and Bob stood before you a few weeks ago and said how important CJP was to him and his ministry, his planned ministry, and where he's going. It's incredibly important to me as well. I would put it 40% of value of being at this place versus seminary being 60%. It's that important to me. I am here answering the call, and what a blessing it's been to be part of this whole campus. I want to challenge you Mennonites in the room to reach out. You've got something very special here, something that I don't know exists anywhere else in the world. And for me, it has been that kind of wow every time I drive across those mountains every morning. So with that said, this is a picture of my thin place. This is a picture in Lower Alabama from the front yard of my family home at sunrise over the Perdita Bay. This is a place where I go to be with God. My father felt the same way, and his father felt the same way, and his father felt the same way. It's a bare, thin place. And I will be disorganized as I can be, but on time, I trust. A thin place, I really want to start with that so you hopefully get your interest. A thin place, you got to eliminate anything between you and the grace of God, and that's a thin place. And that's my view of a thin place. And if I can eliminate all the noise, Alton, come on in. One of my church friends has arrived. So good to see you, sir. You're right on time. You missed. Alton shows up at church about the time to hear me preach. He's almost a Roman Catholic in that regard. He get that offertory in and then get out. But yeah, thank you for being here, Alton. You know, Christ had a thin place. That was the Mount of Olives. And in Luke, it tells us that he frequented that place. He went there to pray. He went there with it so that place between he and God could be accentuated. That was what he wanted to do. Eliminate all the noise, if you will. And I'm going to talk today about death. I'm going to talk about dying, death, and the afterlife. And what I was going to talk about was how we as pastors can reach out to the Holy Spirit that's present in that process and to the Spirit with a small s within the person in the room. And how we as pastors, as we as chaplains, can touch that Spirit, can make that Spirit, enable that Spirit, I think is the word I used in the presentation. So that's where we're going. And I'm going to give you a little background, but not much. I got too many slides, as usual, and I'm going to race through them entirely too fast. But it's important for me today to show you how CJP can be such an important part of any pastor's education here at Eastern Mennonite, and how it's unique. I grew up in a death culture. I grew up in the military, and I know there are a few of us in here that did. That death was part of our life. Death was expected. I went to sea, and this is my last ship that I had of four. This is the USS Glover, which is a frigate, where we spent two tours in the Middle East alone, and that was the only American presence in the Middle East at the time. Death was all around us. Death was ashore. Death was at sea. We lost people through accidents. Fortunately, nobody shot at us, but we lost people. You plan to lose people every time you go to sea, and we lost them. And it was a culture I grew up in. My father was a naval officer, and he expected to lose friends, and did. We used to lose neighbors every week in Norfolk, and a pilot would fly into the ground or whatever. So death was our culture. My father died in 2006, and I held him in my arms when he died. Palliative care was a big part of that. So suddenly there was a project management team called palliative care that made sense of this crazy medical system that was driving me and the family crazy. And they showed up and actually held our hand. They brought the right people and answered the right questions, and we knew, and my father had died in peace. So I suddenly got intrigued with what palliative care was. As a pastor of an older congregation, people started dying on me the minute I showed up. My predecessor said, "Haven't anybody died in 2 years?" And boy, they started dropping like flies the minute I showed up. So I got a firsthand impression of what death was and how, and it didn't bother me. Death became part of me. I was already there ingrained in the culture. So it became an important part of my ministry, an important part of helping people die with dignity and in peace. And I learned about hospice and was fascinated with hospice. So all of these things are building to the presentation. CJP, I did my capstone there, and I did it on the Gulf Coast and on the BP oil spill. And I found that I was pulled into the tragedy of the Gulf, and how did that fit with what I was doing in the seminary? Because I was talking to Methodist churches about the oil spill that had happened down there, and the tragedies that happened, and the suicides, and everything else that went on in the Gulf during that time. And then, of course, I had the wonderful experience, as Brianka has said, of going to CPE with Penny. And that was at Rockingham for 20 weeks, was just incredible. And I was privileged to work in the palliative care team for half of that time. And I really found that I could make a difference with people in dying, that I could walk in steady and calm, hold the hands, and people died in peace. Not because of me, but I was part of it, I think. And I wanted to know more. How can I do better? And I know, Rosemary, you were there too. I mean, you know the experience. So, and then this seminary capstone came to my life, and that's kind of, unfortunately, my wife has experienced my fanaticism for buying books. So somebody would tell me about a book, I would not go check it out. I would buy it. So our library on death is huge. Oh, wrong one. I was introduced in CPE to a gentleman named John Swinton, who is at the University of Aberdeen. I urge you all to read his material. It is wonderful. Raging with Compassion is just a powerful book. But in other books, Living Faithfully, Dying Well is one he's just published, and this is a quote from that, and I don't want to go too far in it, but let me say that it's important what he says. The search for God, the meaning, the hope, the forgiveness, and even the salvation should be seen as a central task of end-of-life procedures. And we as pastors need to understand that. That is critical for us to help them walk across that line. I made some assumptions in this, that one, the spirit and the soul are the same thing, spirit with a little s. So I know there's some of you that will argue with me they're two separate things and point out all kinds of wonderful scriptures to say that. But let me assure you, for this presentation, forget that. They're the same thing. Spirit and the Holy Spirit represent, the Spirit and the Holy Spirit, if you will, is the Holy Spirit that represents God on earth. And the body, mind, and this is the thing that people will really argue with me and I'm really struggling with. The body, mind, and spirit are separate entities. And the difference is that the spirit lives on after the body goes away. The soul survives. And we don't pay any attention to the soul, do we, pastors? We're worried about the body and the mind, and we need to reach out and grab the hand of the spirit, and we don't know how to do that. Nobody spends a lot of time doing that. And one of my elder Methodist pastors said, "Gordon, that sounds like hocus pocus." Okay, it's hocus pocus. Now, how do we figure out how to do it? Let's get back by that. My premise from the beginning was to nurture the body, mind, and soul as an integrated unit, as one piece. But when the body and mind cease to function, be able to work the soul, be able to work with the family, and be able to pull that afterlife together as a separate entity. My questions I had kind of blended together because of Mr. Swinton or Dr. Swinton's comments. And what I was really trying to do was to enable the presence of the Holy Spirit in that dying death process and the afterlife. Swinton says, and the middle one is his, he says to be enabled to love God. He wants us to be able as pastors to go into a situation and represent God and be able to enable the love of God for not only the patient but for the people around the patient. So I really would urge you to pick up Swinton's books and his understanding. And we as ministers, how do we connect with that? How do we connect with a soul? Now, some of you have seen this before. This is a picture of, this is how it all crashed together for me, the seminary and CJP. Working on the Gulf Coast, this is a small Baptist church. When they spilled 200 million gallons of crude oil into the Gulf, and the Gulf was surrounded, the island was surrounded by oil, which they managed to keep out of the press, by the way. The whole island was surrounded. These people went to the Gulf to pray every Sunday like this. But this is the point is here, I started dealing with prayer and compassion as trauma healers, as things we could use in CJP to heal situations, to heal people, where I had been looking at other things and not crossing over and not paying attention to what I was learning in seminary. I was keeping them separate. The assessment tools I'm going to deal with today are these, and I'm not going to waste any time talking about them because I'll talk about them later. But they're all tools I'm going to show you today as we go through this. What do you mean 5 minutes? Really? I can see a clock back here too. Death, dying, and afterlife. You know what they are. Let's move on. This is a stakeholder map. You see in the center of this stakeholder map the patient, but the patient's body, mind, and spirit as separate entities. These are the family and caregivers. These are the health care and legal system and everybody else that impacts that patient. And then down you have an employer and coworkers that I deal with as well. And then finally, and then the faith-based organization, the chaplain being here. So these are the major groupings that you would do if you did a stakeholders map of who you would deal with in a hospital room. The basics that we use in CJP is called a theory of change. How are you going to, given the situation that you're inheriting, how are you going to make a change? How are you going to make it different? And for me, I use the same four elements that I use in the Gulf: the prayer, compassion, fellowship, and forgiveness. And I'll go through those briefly if I can make time stand still, but it doesn't look like I'm doing too well on that. Through the grace of God, prayer, compassion, fellowship, and forgiveness. Prayer, there are different elements of how you pray. I only want to talk about these real quick, being constant prayer when you do it. You know, Paul tells us to be in constant prayer. You got to do that as a pastor in these situations. You got to do it all the time. Contemplative prayer, doing a mindfulness, the Jesus prayer, all these techniques. Think about using that stuff when you're in the room. I mean, we tend to go in and hope we don't think. We just react. And we got to think when in that hospital room. Compassion and dignity. The dignity part is out of a book that I really strongly recommend. Diane Hicks wrote a book called Dignity. It is an incredible book, and it's worth reading about the dignity of any situation you can run into. And the compassion part, reflective listening. If Penny was here, she'd be grinning ear to ear, because she finally taught me after 20 weeks to how to reflective listen. Listen's not something I do very well. fellowship and companionship. Social workers were big on this guy, Alan Wolfelt. Probably downstairs you can find copies of him. Amazing book. Again, I recommend it. There's a bunch of things he talks about in there that we take for granted. Being present when somebody's dying. This came out of the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying. And if I had the time, I'd say, show you how they fit together. They're the same story. The Tibetan Book of Living and Dying is more of a practical guide. It tells you, stand here in the room, breathe slowly. It tells you exactly what to do. Get it. If you haven't looked at it, get it. I don't expect you all to become monks or Tibetan monks, but you're already Mennonites, so it's probably not a far... Forgiveness, a list of things to forgive. In the interest of time, this is a snail diagram. I took the four theories of change, laid them on top of the grace of God, and this is, person begins to die. You got to get them out of this loop where they're feeling sorry for themselves, because all the wonderful things that are going to happen between then and death happen along this area here. If they cycle in this, it's going to be a tough time to die, tough, hard death. So think about that kind of stuff. Dying, there's references. I can give anybody a copy of this that wants it, by the way, for all these references. Dying and the apprehension, except blah, let's go on. I also use this. Let me make sure I got this. Yeah. I use this as a nested paradigm. You see, the issue here, in every room you have issues, you have fear of death. You're going to have financial issues. You have a bunch of issues you're dealing with in the room. Why can't we use this? So we start with the issue, the relationship, the family and friends wrap around that. The subsystem is the religious affiliation, and the system, the big system overall, is their belief structure, their belief systems. So it's how you do it, how you pull this together. Family, some of you seen that. Okay, death. And again, there's all kinds of little quotes here that I can't get into at this point with time. The onion is another model we use there. And I use this for what is a family member's situation? What are they thinking about? And so when I got digging into it, their needs, their interest, and their position. Needs, interest, and position. And the different things. So you can analyze these. Again, Penny would be excited to see that I put the advanced medical directive in there is one of the things that folks would worry about. Or down here, the do not resuscitate items. So these are things the family members would be thinking about that we can work in. But we got to get it here. We got to get it here before we put it here. And this is what you help to do there. I put this in so Jane would think I was okay. This is my framing. You got to frame the situation. And the short-term problems, long-term problems is how I did it. And, the short-term problems in the afterlife, the fear of death, basic human necessities, etc. But there's also long-term problems you need to deal with. You can frame it anywhere, but you need to go in and frame these things, whether it be by time or by money or by medical services or whatever, but frame them so you can deal with them in the afterlife and the and before you die. I also did some work one summer in SPI, and I want to raise my hand real high. Those of you who haven't been in SPI, the Summer Peacebuilding Institute, a week-long course, 3 hours credit. It's incredible. And I was in there. I was the only American male, and there were 18 people, the 26 people in the class, and 18 of them were from the Pacific Islands and women, and it was amazing. I had no knowledge of what went on in Papua New Guinea, and what a wow. And so this is the model that I won't get in, but it's available. A model of this is, I titled it Living Well to Die Well, and how you would do it. The family, the people themselves, the financial issues, and then how it's all linked together. And I'm sorry I can't spend more time on it. Barry Hart had something called the trauma wheel, and I changed it to the peace wheel. You see here, presence of God, the God's grace in the middle, then all these things that I've been talking about, companionship, prayer, I added meditation, music, etc., all wrapped around the grace of God in the presence of the Holy Spirit, and that leads us down this road of dying, death, and salvation. So thinking about what's in here, but always maintaining God's grace and the Holy Spirit. God's grace and the Holy Spirit. I want to talk about Gerald. You're going to flat? Pardon me? I'm on my own time? Oh. I'm trying. I'm watching you more than the clock. Okay. I want to talk about a real situation that I had as CPE. I walked in a room, and there was a family, and the nurse grabbed me and said, "You need to go in there." They were just told Gerald's not going to make it. And I walked in the room, and one of the people in the room said, "I know you. You're our pastor." They had moved from Standardsville to Elkton, and they were one of those people that I'd send out Christmas cards to or whatever with a picture of me and my dog. And then my wife and my dog, after we got married, we go out. The dog is the constant, I noticed, Dana. They knew me, and I didn't know them. And he was dying, 89-year-old. And in the dying process that I was with him, I talked to him briefly, but I couldn't get much out of him. But he suddenly leaped up and pushed his way out of the bed and looked at the sky. And his daughter was there on the other side holding one hand while I held the other. And she said, "Papa, what are you looking at?" And he said, "Heaven, heaven, and it's beautiful." And then he collapsed down into his bed. He died. That was that thin place. That was that place where that room, and that woke me up. That said, "God, how do I talk to your spirit in the room? How do I make that happen to everybody? Wow, can I force that? Can I enable that? Can I tickle that? Can I set the environment? How do I do that?" And so that's where we came. And that's why this thin place is so important. And that's why this is looking at sunset in my thin place. And on the other side of this is Arnica Bay. And don't you feel like you can reach out and touch the face of God there? And every time you go into a situation where somebody's dying, it is such a privilege to be there. To touch not only the patient, but the face of God. Thank you.